Okay, so we're live. Welcome back to the Magic Minds podcast. I'm Matt Bourke. You're watching and listening to the Liberty's number one podcast. Yup the Liberties, yup the Flats, but most of all, yup the Liberty Market. On the show today, I'm joined by Paul McCormick. Paul, what's the crack?
How are you doing there, Matt? All's good. All's good, thank God.
What a place.
Yeah, it's beautiful, isn't it? It's a palace.
Sunny, yeah. Bray.
I know, yeah.
When I worked out here for many years, I didn't see much of the sun or the beautiful decor in your gaff. It was at night. This is incredible. Sun gaff.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, isn't it? Very blessed to get it. I'm amazed, actually, yeah, how we got it. I mean, I've done a lot of work and done it up. But, yeah, it's a lovely space. Sometimes I curse the garden.
Yeah, and you're running around in your mower.
But, I mean, we can't. Obviously, maybe you might want to take a few shots before you go on the other side. But there's some of the view we have and the vista we have out the window. And, you know.
Absolutely. I got a little bit of a flashback there when I drove up and I seen the apple tree. I'm from the inner city, as you know, and the only times we saw apple trees when we were climbing into people's back gardens to rob the apples. So I got a bit of a flashback there.
Oh yeah, there's apples and there's plums and there's a pear tree and there's loads of different stuff in the garden.
Oh jeez, they'll be calling you the man from Del Monte next.
No, I do nothing. Cut the grass. I've always, I would have liked it, but I tend to be very busy all the time doing workshops and doing stuff. So, you know, maybe someday I'll slow down enough to sit in the garden. And,
Yeah,
I suppose that's what old folks do, don't they? As they get older, they seem to just slow down, connect with the soil, connect with the earth more. And just
I love the fact that you say old folks, not you're not definitely old. But look, that's what...
Well, I'm in my 60s, but that, you know, that's not old anymore, is it?
No, Jesus Christ. Guys, I've asked Paul to come on the show because Paul is the creator of Holotropic Breathwork Ireland, an extensive background in psychotherapy. I think I can remember you've done psychoanalysis, some shaman works, lots of deep work around trauma, and that's been born out of his own trauma and his own difficulties in life. And I'm going to try to explore that and share that with you because I've spent some time with Paul doing holotropic breathwork and I'm absolutely enamoured by the work that he does, but then also his attitude. And Debbie kind of sums up my pal Debbie Collins, the sacred clown. He has this beautiful way of dealing with trauma, has all the psychological studies now, but brings a lot of humour, and I love that. Is that important to you, actually, humour?
Well, it is the way I am. It's not, I mean, initially it was challenging because people didn't like it, because there's all this kind of gravitas that, you know, and like, that's not me. I just, you know, and the thing about breathwork is, you know, is you've got to be authentic. It's about learning to be authentic. The first thing that I was exposed to was authentic movement, which wasn't breathwork, but it was you know, learning to move and express as you are right now, as opposed to kind of presenting. So I've just had to honour myself. Yeah, and I wouldn't be an atypical. Most therapists are introverted, but, you know, I'm an extrovert. I've been an extrovert. Whether I developed it as a result of, like someone said to me the other day, I'm very resilient, and I hadn't met this person ever before, and he said, you must have had a poxy childhood. And I was quite, well, that's quite a good observation, do you know what I mean? Because that's the truth, I did. Very unhappy childhood, very traumatic. But out of that, I learned to kind of cope. And humour was a big part of that. And big kind of fuck yous and anti-authority. And I was with a therapist yesterday, actually, because both my folks died in the last year and two other good mates. And I thought, I'll go and do some therapy myself. Yeah, but I found... I did 15 minutes of breathing there at the last workshop, and I found that more happened in the 15 minutes of breathing than has happened in 10 sessions with the therapist. I mean, it's nice to talk to her, and she's nice, and but breathwork just is right in the body. It's, you know yourself, you've experienced it.
Oh, unbelievable. Yeah. I made a video after my first holotropic experience. I came across Debbie by a happy accident, as Ken Doyle down the road would say, a happy accident. And I done a video after the first holotropic experience, and the best way I could explain it, it was like therapy on crack. It was, I've done all the work and therapy, not all the work, but done a lot of work, a lot of counselling and reading books and videos. But holotropic breathwork brought me right to the core of trauma, the pain. It brought me back to experience it. Could you give us a little insight for our people? You'll explain it better than I would. What holotropic breathwork is really?
That's it. It just, it's a technique to put you into a non-ordinary state of consciousness, you know, which everybody loves. You see people taking drugs, drink, fucking. But in the healing potential of non-ordinary states, when done in the right way, not, you know, when we're not down the beach or doing raves, but when it's held in the non-ordinary state, we can kind of access material we wouldn't be able to, like the two of us sitting here now. And there's great healing potential in that. So what breathwork is a technique to access a non-ordinary state. It doesn't involve any drugs. Doesn't, you know, you're not talking about simple breathing, bit of music, feeling the support around you. And in that environment, then your inner healer, the mechanism that protects you and helps you and heals you, can present whatever it needs to present. Now, I mean, I know you're focusing on trauma, but it doesn't have to always be trauma, if you understand what I mean.
Brilliant.
Like, when I started this with another lad many years ago, we also sold it to artists and actors and people because it seemed to enhance their creativity. It kind of got them out of a lock and a block to be able to express. Basically, breathwork expands consciousness. So obviously, if there's trauma in your body, that is constricting you. And that's, you know, people get addicted and take me fucking smack and I smoke my ear and because I'm trying to so breathwork opens that up, basically. And then the thing is, if you open that up, like, you, and you've got to do it in such a way as you can integrate it, it makes sense. So I mean, I can sit and talk and do this and do that, but nothing happens down here, and this is where all the information is. This is just like a TV receiver. Do you know what I mean? This is where it all is, and this lies. My mind will lie. I can make up stories like Tarantino. I was thinking of that. You know what I mean? We could look at my nail here and we could make up a whole encyclopedia about my nail.
And we believe it.
Yeah, exactly.
We believe our own bullshit, don't we?
Totally.
But the body holds a score, isn't it? Like, the trauma comes in here, or the messages, it gets stored in our body.
But there's also the divine. I'm not trying to dish trauma, but like the divine, look around us here. Look at this beauty. We're part of that. We're connected with that. So that's also something that people sometimes lose sight of.
They become separate.
Well, you get split.
Yeah, split.
You know, you get split away and you carry resentments and you carry hurts and and then you can't actually enjoy this. You can't enjoy the beauty, the magnificence.
It's very magnificence. I love that one. It's very hard, though, to acknowledge, become aware, open your eyes to the beauty and the wonder and the magnificence around you when you're blinded sometimes by your own pain.
Yeah, like a woman came to me here once, and I was at the time I was studying a thing called the Diamond Approach, which is all about finding your magnificence, right?
I love this story.
Yeah. And she arrives up and she sits in. So I'm all full of this, and we said, I'll find this out with her now. And we go on there now. And tell us a bit about your magnificence. And she erupts. I didn't fucking come here to talk about magnificence. What the fuck? And she storms out the door and fucking drives off at high speed.
And what do you think was her problem?
She was so attached to her hurt.
Yeah.
And this woman was very traumatised, gang raped as a young girl, and really abused, and was continuing to allow people to have sex with her, kind of. Just was so attached to it. She couldn't let go of it. So when I suggested, and I understand that when I started that technique, that particular technique, I kept going back to being beaten as a child and my head split open with a spade and this. And the woman kept saying, I'm not asking you about that. I don't want to know about that. I want to know about your magnificence. But in my, I really struggled with her.
Right.
You know, so I could understand that woman's response, and I probably should have kind of let it in a little bit gentler. You know, in a sort of way, because the idea of magnificence is, I mean, it's like a mandala speech that we're afraid of our own beauty.
Yeah.
We're afraid of our own wonderfulness.
That is absolutely so on point, because I know, not saying that I'm gaining traction with the Magic Minds podcast, but I'd be scared to go from the position I'm in to full on notoriety, that people know me and I'm fully seen and my work is criticized and annotated. That scares the shit out of me. And it's gradually building. So I think Jeff Thompson says it, sometimes we fear being successful rather than a failure.
Totally. Failure safe. If I'm in a messy bog of pain and I know it, and that fucking bitch bit the shit out of me and they fucked me up, it's all very familiar, and it's, you know, it's kind of a holding. But like, if I'm magnificence, that's massively responsible. I'm then responsible. I have to step up and engage with it. I mean, I do. I think that sometimes too. I used to stand on the deck and think, how did I get this? Do you know what I mean? I used to be addicted to heroin, fucking cocaine, bad shape. I was supposed to be dead at 23 years old. Do you know what I mean? Look at this. It's fucking magnificent. I have two wonderful sons. I have a wonderful wife. I know hundreds of people, thousands of people. I've been involved in so many people's stories. And even me, ma, a while back, I went on a 9-day Vipassana. I used to do it every year. I haven't done it now in 2 years.
I'm really looking forward to doing that.
Yeah, it's a challenge. But after that, I realized I was holding on to my resentment towards her at some level and blaming her, you know. And so I went up and spoke to her, and I thanked her for beating the shit out of me as a child. and traumatized me. And he's standing there, and his tears, my dad, and his tears running down his face. And she kind of looks at me. But it did change things. I mean, there's no, like, if you get beaten enough times, you're never going to trust someone. Do you know what I mean? So I never liked her touching me or coming near me or stuff. But at the same time, it eased something. Because I realised I was holding on to the resentment, that it was poisoning me. The poison was in me.
Mm.
Not her. This woman is tortured. This woman hates what she's done. She spent her whole life racked with guilt and shame. And I mean, I didn't see that for a long time, how unhappy she was.
Mm. Yeah, I can so connect with that, because I've had a difficult relationship with my own ma. She never knew about it, because I never spoke about the pain. It was only through the holotropic breathwork stuff and the therapy that I acknowledged the pain, I experienced it. And that allowed me then to see through, because then I was able to become grateful of things that she'd done for me, the strengths that she gave me. Because all I used to focus on, oh, she did this, she didn't tell me she loved me, she hit me when I was young, and blah, blah, blah. And then when I experienced all that, I was then, my eyes opened and my awareness grew that, oh, she does this, this and that for me, and she's so loving in a different way. But she too was struggling with her own.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, it's tricky, isn't it? I was at an AA meeting there recently, and a guy said, let's not talk about what they did to us. Let's talk about what they did for us. And that's, you can see, and I can feel myself too, thinking, yeah, that's beautifully simple. Don't come on about all the harm. And that brings us back to the magnificence. Like, I can look and keep looking. Oh, that's a bucket of shit. Oh, look at me fucking pain. Ah, me pain. Yeah. Which is fine. But then why not also look into the light?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I know I'm not a Jesus head now, to have to be honest, right? But I do think if you really believe in the Christ and the God, why wouldn't you sing it out? Why wouldn't you run up and down the street shouting Jesus? You know what I mean? Because it's brilliant, if that's the truth.
Yeah.
If you can have salvation and peace and love, and why not shout it out?
100%. The thing about the trauma, right, for me, you know, is because I never put a language on it, I never allowed myself to experience it and feel it in my body. I had it in my head, but I didn't allow it to be in my body. I was only then, when I processed that and felt it and I expressed it and done the work, discharged that we did in holotropic, then I was able to move through it. It wasn't holding on to me, and I wasn't holding on to it. So there's a bit of that in it as well, isn't there?
Yeah, that's why you need a physical therapy. Like, talk therapy is great, and your filtering and your marketing department's putting all the information together, and that makes sense, and we need to make sense. But, like, this is the engine. This is where the memories are. I mean, this is a little filter that we can, oh, yeah, I remember that, but this is where it's stored. So if you don't do some sort of body work, I think my first training was an analyst, and it, you know, it's great. You sit down, you take notes, and people talk about their dreams, and you get into their imagination. And it's very revealing, but there was no change. I began to notice people were not changing. They were coming back every week, and sometimes you'd have to see them two or three times a week, because that was the model. But nothing was changing, if you understand what I mean. Yeah. There was no change. Then I kind of got more into addiction, working in a rehab, and seeing something like the 12-step program. If people actually practice the program and change their behavior, things do change and their feelings change. But they have to take action first. And then you begin to see it's grounded in the body. The spiritual is grounded in the physical. So there has to be physical work done. It can't just be sitting talking. I mean, I know that's great, and it's great. Oh, yeah. You know. And the woman I went to see yesterday, she's a very nice woman. And I mean, she sat there a few weeks ago crying, and I'm kind of looking at her, well, what are you crying about? She says, but what you told me is really sad. I said, yeah, but that's mine. What are you crying? I'm paying you to cry. You know? And then, you know, that takes you out somewhere else in the relationship, and all the projections and stuff. But so I suppose the one thing about, I mean, I had a woman many years, I think 14 years, she came to see me as a private client. And the value of that was I was the only person in her life she could be herself with. She was at war with everybody else, her family, her friends, you know, with herself. So it was a space. So that is the value of a therapeutic space, a container where you can just go, yeah. But you're not going to clear, as you say, and I suppose it is trauma, like we're all traumatized. I mean, Stan Groff, who developed this, saw birth as a trauma, and that in that trauma of birth, we set up these patterns, and we keep acting them out. So it wasn't just, I mean, he wasn't just locked into childhood or biographical material. Stan, and that's where I found the training as a Jung and useful, because Stan is a big fan of Jung, that we're all connected, there's much more that goes back.
The collective unconscious.
Yeah, and like the Buddha say, you know, reincarnation or past lives, or call it what you like.
Yeah.
So there's more than just Like, say for me, my role in the family would have been a scapegoat. So I got the shit knocked out of me so that everyone's shit could be flowing in one direction. But then when I started doing the breathwork, I began to have experiences of being on Inca Mountains and being fucked into the fire. And so there was a link, do you understand,
yes,
between the actual biographical and what would be called the transpersonal.
Okay.
Outside. And then you just, your mind starts to go, oh, Jesus, I don't know what the fuck's going on. And we don't.
No.
We don't. I mean, I'd have concerns at the moment for the planet and all, lots of stuff like that. But
yeah,
we don't know what's going on. And hopefully the planet, which is much greater wisdom than any of us, will just shrug its shoulders and throw us off. If that's what's happening, like, you know, if that's what's necessary. Because we seem as humans unable to really, despite all our knowledge, do what's right, do we? You know, we're, despite all the science and the psychology and that, we're still slaughtering each other and robbing each other and beating each other up.
Yeah, we haven't moved on. You know, we have advanced. I say this to people all the time. We advanced so much in technology and
and science, yeah.
And science, but humans as a species, we haven't developed, and we're still doing crazy shit and hurting each other a lot. Mm-hmm. Would it be okay if we went back and kind of chatted about childhood? Give us a picture of what that was like. Oh, yeah, trauma.
She was at me yesterday. She was at me. Isn't that terrible to say with the therapist? What about the inner child? I know, I'm being, and see, there's an irreverence that has helped me cope,
yeah,
and that irreverence you've seen in the workshops, but it's not an abusive irreverence, it's just, let's not take ourselves too seriously. But yeah, I was heavily traumatized. I mean, the physically beaten, mentally beaten, abused, sexually abused. I was actually thinking, I broke down the other day in one of the sessions with Debbie in the breathwork, we were doing a breathwork in Westport. And I'm kind of sitting there and everyone's shouting and roaring. And, you know what I mean? And I was thinking of my parents, they're dead, and the attempt to love them, to connect with them, and I cared for them for the last few years. I was the care, which was kind of ironic when you think about it. But I started just crying there, looking around the room. And I did get an image of me as a child, you know, sensitive, open, wanting to love and wanting to be happy. But it was a struggle. I remember I came home with a little kitten. I found a kitten on the road. It was blind. I brought it home and I was really upset, you know, to look after, and she fucking lost it. You fucking cry over every fucking kitten, you're gonna have a fucking miserable life. The kitten dies, right? Of course, it dies. So I'm out in the garden and she's shouting at me, but I got a shoebox and I buried it in the garden. Do you know what I mean? I was fucking distraught for the kitten, but that was kind of beaten out of me at one level.
Did it harden you?
I remember standing in my bedroom, I probably was about 9, 10 years old, and thinking, no fucker's going to hurt me again. Do you know what I mean? And then I started getting into drugs. I got into drink at 10, started smoking, got into drugs 12, 13 years old. Just remember, you know what I mean? And it was all acting out. I mean, if I hadn't done that, I'd be dead. I would have fucking hung myself out of a tree, or, you know, that sort of way.
Well, so, Gabor Matty talks about that, doesn't he? That, you know, drug addiction is, it's crazy to think, but it's a smart move.
Well, it can save you.
It can save you. It's a form of coping.
Yeah exactly. Yeah.
It soothes that pain.
And you stop feeling. Yeah. It's like I say to people after the breathworks, watch out, because if you have an addiction, it'll rise up, because you've now expanded yourself, and the addiction will shut down. But I mean, you acted out. I did a lot of acting out. I suppose in retrospect, it's kind of sad. You know, at the time, you didn't care, and you fuck everybody, and experimented with sex and different forms of sexuality and fucking chase stuff. And then I got into cocaine, and that kind of, I suppose it became kind of nasty then or something. I was very self-obsessed. I mean, before that I'd been taking a lot of dope and acid, and do you know what I mean? And then when I got into the cocaine, I got into money. I made money, you know what I mean?
Were you knocking it out? Were you selling?
Oh yeah, I always dealt. All right, Your Honor.
All right, Pablo Escobar. Yeah. I'm fucking down.
Yeah. But I mean, I remember that sometimes, like,
we're going to queue, are you? Knocking out one of our bags.
I had a flat in Donnybrook, right? Not a bad flat actually, but a bit smelly. But I'd get a big bag of coke and I'd stick it in the fridge. And then I'd kind of come to on Sunday and the bag would nearly be empty. And I wouldn't have sold any of it. And then I'm like, so then you have to do other things and money and. Mads, I have a great story. I hope you don't mind me telling this, but the dealer arrived with his missus and he has his coke and he got it, you know, he'd fucking eat it. Yeah, he opens up the coke. I don't know, it was about a key of coke. And he kind of looks, oh, look at this, right? And he drops it. and it falls on the fucking carpet, and the carpet was one of these deep piles, you know, those really shit, you don't see them anymore, shitty wiry carpet, right? And he starts crying, like, he starts crying, and his wife steps forward and smacks him across the face, put yourself the fucking together, and we all get down, right, and we're, and like, and then I'm like, oh, lads, you gotta get out of here, someone's gonna be coming, you know, take and get the fuck out of here. So he got as much as he could and he left. I got down, right,
like Nilfist.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm down Leeson Street later, fucking dancing with all these fucking Elvins. They were Elvins, I was a young lad. I was, excuse me, and a piece of carpet comes out of me nose, and I'm running bang dance. Now, that's a funny thing. I mean, there's terrible things with coke, and
of course,
you're heartless, you don't give a fuck. All, but you know, we'd stay up all night. I don't know if you remember Jason's playing snooker and stuff. And,
oh, 100%. Yeah,
doing mad things. Do you know what I mean? But it was, I couldn't tell you today what coke feels like. Like, I can't remember. Then, like, from the coke, I got into gear. Gear is kind of, I suppose it was, it had to be.
It was a natural progression.
Yeah, it had to be. There was just too much pain. There was too much stuff. And getting into heroin was a blessing because it brought me to my knees. I ended up in rehab.
What do you mean by that brought to knees and
wild? Like, I was very functional, I was very successful. I had my car, right. I'd got a flat in fucking Stanorgan. I was, do you know what I mean? I was into technology, and like, I probably sounds terrible, but I am very bright.
Very surprised at that.
Yeah, no, do you know what I mean? Yeah. I'm able to do, and I'm what's known as a polyglot. So I can do lots of different things and be involved in lots of stuff.
What, say that again?
A polyglot. Ah,
like, yeah.
So I'm not just one thing. Yeah. So, I mean, I was relatively successful, but I remember a lad coming up to me. I was at a wedding in Greystones, and I'm always having problems in relationships. And he was like, you're so good at everything, but you can't seem to hold a relationship together. And I remember thinking, yeah, bollocks. But at the same time, thinking, wow, that's a good observation. But not thinking it was anything to do with drugging and drinking, or because especially when I drank, I was completely headcase. I was looking to lose it. Go into a room, look for the biggest guy, fucking give him a tap, place a ton of, you know what I mean?
Jesus.
Blackout, sort of blacking out. Well, I woke up in London once. I've gone down to Dunleary for a drink. I know, I shouldn't laugh because it's not funny. I mean, someone could have been killed, right? I mean, I am blessed to be here. Because I would just drink so much, I'd black out.
And got to London.
Yeah, well, obviously got on the boat, because the boat was down Dunleary and there was no big deal.
Yeah.
You could just get on the boat and pay them the money. Fucking,
and you end up in London.
Drink.
Jesus Christ.
Now, then I began to do terrible things and getting into terrible violence and not remembering it. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, not good. Not good at all. So,
does that carry, you pause, then you stop for a second. Does that bring a lot of shame and guilt still?
Well, it's kind of sadness, you know. I tried to kill her.
Who?
My missus.
Really?
Yeah, I went at her. She locked herself in a car and I snapped off the windscreen wipe and I was trying to smash the windscreen. Was that
coke or heroin fueled? Or?
No, I was strung out. It was drink. And she probably said something like, you need to fucking cop yourself on. You know what I mean? Some sort of mild intervention, and I lost it. So, but that was good. That kind of precipitated. But that wasn't the reason. The main reason was selfish. I got really sick. And I couldn't, and I wanted a black garage, you know what I mean? And literally, I just couldn't get it together.
You wanted to rob a garage?
Yeah, of course, yeah. That was very popular at the time.
Yeah, jump overs.
Yeah, exactly.
That was in the 80s and 90s. People were doing. I talked about that when I did go to the
85, you know.
Huge heroin epidemic, huge robbing culture, handbag snatching, car robberies, jump overs, as they were called, or blags. Mm. And you wanted to do one of them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, do anything.
And she was like, and did you
she
do
anything? She
wasn't
involved.
But she was like, Tanya, don't be doing that, you fucking agent.
I think she wanted to be treated properly. Like, we had some rage, you know. I mean, I didn't realise all this till I stopped. But anyway, I went to the doctor to get some Libyan or Valium or something. I was going to go to Lanzarote, you know, the usual, lie on the beach. And I was blessed. The doctor said, you're off your fucking head. You're a fucking heroin addict. You know what I mean? I'm doing nothing for you. And
Were you taking heroin? Were you mainline? Were you smoking gear?
Smoking it all the time, yeah. And she said, you're fucked. You need to go to Jervis Street. So I went in thinking, you know what I mean? When I got into Jervis Street, I had no gear and I couldn't get it. But you see, all these are all blessings. I mean, I probably could have been into Fatima and got some, but I was like, I'm lying in Jervis Street, sick as a pig, and your man says, we can't do anything for you without the help of your family. And I'm like, fuck off. My family are a share of fucks. And he rings my sister. And I remember lying there, and I can hear him, Patricia, your brother's here, he's a heroin addict, we need to come down to the hospital now. God love her. You know what I mean?
And did they
that
know?
That actually upsets me.
Did they know?
No, they know. I was fucking driving around my car with my fucking Susan. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, they didn't. Nobody knew.
And does that upset you with the family stuff, your sister?
Well, it upsets me with my sister because I only, my ma died last July, last June, and I realised she hated her. I rang my sister to tell her my ma's dead. She said, oh, that's fucking great news. Delighted to hear that.
Oh, fucking hell. Did you not know?
No, I didn't, you see. Because I stepped out, probably at about 14, I stepped out of family. I mean, I was there at times, you know what I mean? But it was like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Got into the drugs and drink, and then came out of that, and then felt guilty, and then got into therapy and started training as a therapist, which I never planned, you know what I mean? And had loads of resentment. But I realised, with my sister over the last year, she never healed. Like, she's a great woman and she's done great work for people like myself. She's big into care. But she's never healed herself. She's kind of huge resentment. And again, I didn't do this out of virtue. It was just circumstance. Like, it started in the rehab where they challenge you. And then by going to meetings, the 12-step community, if you don't deal with the shits inside you, you'll fucking use it again. It's simple. You know what I mean? If I don't process the pain, I'll go back to behaviours. If I don't change my behaviour, then I'll be the same.
Yeah.
And like they say, you know, if you come into AA or that, as a horse thief, you're a better horse thief if you're not drinking. Do you know what I mean? Because you're fucking... So I realised that my sister, it's God love her, I feel sad. And then she kind of started opening up to me over the last year, and which was useful. And like she was saying, thank God you're fucking here because no one else can validate my experience. Because my ma was famous. She was an artist and did great work and did great work in the local school, teaching kids art and bringing kids, you know, look who are disadvantaged into the education through art. She did wonderful stuff. I could never appreciate that because I fucking hate her and had resentment. Do you understand what I mean? I couldn't see that side. And at the funeral, all these people queuing up, even in COVID, they all came down and Betty this and Betty that. And I was thinking, that's not the fuck.
What's that old saying, house devil, street angel? Was it that one?
I think she was a paranoid schizophrenic, to be quite honest with you. Yeah, who was never treated.
Did no one notice this?
No, we did in the school. House. Yeah. No, they thought she was a bit quirky, but she was doing art.
She just thought she was an artist, and that's just the way she goes on.
Yeah, she was grand, and I mean, but she was also great. She did great work, and I never enjoyed that. So that's a sadness, that's a loss. But because of my own resentment and hurt, And then I think of this about loads of people. I sometimes see them on the floor, you listen to them in the sharing circles, and they come in. You know, I'm retired now as a practitioner, but they sit in the practice and they're talking, and you think, you're just living in your wound. You're living in your pain. You're not living. You're so, as you said, you're so caught up with the toothache that you can't fucking see what the beauty that lies around you. And I'm the same. I mean, I've done all sorts of stuff. And I remember the first time I think was drinking ayahuasca. I went to Mead and I drank ayahuasca. And I'm lying there and the fucking stuff has me whacked, right? And I'm thinking, I'm totally attached to fucking pain. I live, you know what I mean? But there was a little kind of glimmer that could change. And that was fantastic.
That's a big one, isn't
it? Yeah, I kind of missed it then. But that little glimmer, wow, I could be different. I don't have to always be looking at pain and looking at me woundedness and me poxy childhood and all the mistakes I made. Because I did terrible things, man.
Yeah, me too.
Terrible things.
Terrible things.
For sure, and I'm probably responsible for people's debt. Not directly, but by supplying them with fucking class A drugs.
How do you know what I mean? How do you sit with that? How do you deal with that? What's your...
Well, I try to rationalise it, and I've been through a lot. I mean, when I started a breathwork, I fucking puked my ring all over the place. It was very difficult, do you know what I mean? And I realise now, in retrospect, the same thing when I started drinking ayahuasca. I was so sick, and I was thinking, why am I so sick, and all these other people are sitting here fucking... I realised it was karma and all the stuff I had to clear. You know what I mean? And I wasn't, I'm not bad, I'm a very decent human being. But so a lot of people say.
Yeah. You're not bad and you're not good. There's badness in you and there's goodness in you too. And it's about what you shine the light of and focus on and grows. I think what you said is very significant. It's getting that, and I talk about this in program course I run, it's getting that glimpse of awareness that you can create a space or a gap between your pain and something else. Mm. Love, kindness, compassion, hobbies, God, Jesus, Buddha. Because we get so consumed, but when you, as you say, you're seeing a little light and then it goes. And I say, but you can create that and expand that gap.
Once you see it, that was great to see that.
Yeah, because I remember rolling around on my floor crying, and then something happened to my family, and I let my pain go. I attended to what I needed to do, and when that was gone, I came back to my pain. And I asked myself, why is the pain not with you when you were busy with your family? I said, wow, you can create a space, a gap. You can let me pain go. It's a choice. I know that's probably hard for people.
Well, I think you need to get well enough to, like, you know, if I have to go and get gear or fucking drink or, you know what I mean, or caught up in an addiction, I can't, there's no space for that. The addiction drives everything, you know, that's sort of. But so if you can stop, if you can step it back for whatever the attachment is, or if you're codependent, like, you know, me, Johnny, and this, or, I mean, my wife was codependent. And she would say that she is thankful for me coming into recovery because it changed her whole life and all her relationships. So she thanks me for it. So, which is grand, because, I mean, there's no point in us hanging on to it. And I had a great experience with a man. I did a lot of work with a man called Josep. He's a Spanish kind of ayahuascaro. And we were doing in the circle one day, and I was, you know, like that. You saw the emotion that's there. I'm not happy about the way I behave towards her. And he was like, he calls me up, right? Like, because you're all sitting around. And he fucking whacks me in the chest, right? Like, whacks me. I fall over. And he says, it's done. And he's actually right. I've never felt that kind of mad. Oh, you know what I mean? I feel sad because it's a sad thing. But it was gone. Amazing experience. Literally punched it out.
Really?
Yeah.
Fuck me.
So, I mean, there's different ways of, you know, of working physically. Breathwork, there's meditation, there's yoga, there's Tai Chi, there's exercise, as you say, there's sport. But I think that other directedness, in AA they talk about constant thought of others, which is impossible because we're all very self-obsessed. Mm. But to try every time you drop in, pull out, like you said, come out, think about fucking kids who are fucking in fucking with spina bifida, think about old people on their own, people, you know, Bill, me mate, who built that place in Westport, lying there, he's been lying there for 3.5 years, can't even go to the toilet, can't wash his own teeth. Like, there's people suffering. There is real suffering. I'm not really suffering. Because your woman says to me, I say, oh, the trauma of the child and stuff. And I kind of said to her, yeah, I hear you, but I'm not suffering now. Do you know what I mean? I might have health issues, I might have family issues, I might have to deal with grief, but that's life. So the trauma, I'm not living in trauma, and I'm very blessed not to be in that. And to have facilitated, I think I've facilitated lots of other people to move out of their trauma and to become free.
I think what you said is very significant, and the Buddha's training and teaches that we create our own suffering. The second arrow, the wound happens, but then we get the arrow and we keep stabbing ourselves, and that's proper suffering. As what you just rightly said there, we can't deny health problems, family problems. That's not suffering, that's just life.
That's life,
exactly. Dealing with that's like dealing with the weather. It comes and it goes, it rains, it's sunny. These things are experience of our human existence. But suffering can be done by ourselves. We keep putting that arrow back into ourselves, whether it's the addiction or the stuff you did with your wife, and it's something to bear in mind, isn't it? We can create our own suffering.
Totally, yeah, I gotta let it go, you know. And in fairness, you know, if I had killed people, I mean, I don't know how many, we're 40 years together nearly now, next year. I'm a long time doing this work. I haven't taken a drink since 1985. So if I'd been sent to jail, I would have been out 15 years ago. But it's not jail. It's. But I've been very blessed, and a lot of people, I didn't realise in the beginning, I mean, a recovery is definitely a big part of it. When I came into recovery, people were very kind to me. I didn't see, you know what I mean? Yeah. I didn't see it as kindness. A counsellor, he was gay, and he was very good, and he brought me to his house. And I remember sitting there saying, you're trying to fuck me, aren't you? Isn't that why you brought me here? And I had no sensibility, I had no boundaries, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I didn't, it was kind of all eat, shit, fuck, whatever, all sensation based, and no sense of, and I didn't understand, why do people stay together? How come he loves her and he doesn't love her? Like, why don't they just fuck each other? It was all over the place when I think about it.
That's very significant, and I want to ask you, because something you touched on earlier, you said your man said to you, you can't hold relationships, or you have difficult relationships. How did you
How did you solve that?
Because I know you've got great relationships with your wife, your spokesman, Debbie and Nora and all the
I have two great kids.
And
yeah.
You seem like you have mastered that, and that's something I'm working on.
It's all right.
How did that work for you? Because that's a big project of mine, and it's working of late. You know, great relation with my mom, my dad, my family. It's the intimate stuff. How did you?
I suppose just over time. I mean, I obviously got lost in therapy and other people's business. You know, that sort of way, by being a therapist and a carer and a counselor and working in the rehab, and, which is all great. And but I think it was practice. Daily practice, slowly realizing it's not all about me, and it's as simple as that. But like, slowly realizing, I've been lucky enough to people around me, and my wife especially, who always, you know, she says, I know when you're lying, Paul, your lips are moving.
That's a lot.
Or also, it's not all about you, it's, you know what I mean, because we'd be talking about something, or fucking a friend having an affair or something, and I'd be, how would you be now finding it? It's not all about you, Paul, it's not all about you. But that's part of it. I think working the program has been a huge part of it, like the 12-step program.
Really?
Yeah, huge part. In and out of it. You know what I mean? Admitting powerlessness. Having some level of humility. Trying to get honest. But there is, now, I mean, someone caught me out the other day, sadly, and I suppose I should admit it, really. There's a part of me nobody gets.
What's that?
It's just me, a part of me, though, you know, from that, at that age of, like, no one's going to hurt me. I kind of, there's just a part that people don't get, and even a woman called me this the other day, she said, there's loads of people who think they're your friend, and they're not really, are they? And I was like, no, they're not.
No.
I could walk away in the morning.
We know that.
And it wouldn't bother me. I'd struggle with me missus. I mean, I could walk away from Debbie and Nora in the morning. I'm going to even practice it now in a few months to step back and to see how much my ego is attached to it. It's a good exercise in letting go, you know what I mean? Hopefully I'll come back in a couple of months. But that is part of the trauma. That is the damage, like you were referring to, that the inability, object relations. It's kind of learning to relate to like substances and money, and you know what I mean? Because you don't understand true intimacy, true love, true care. But thankfully, true things like the breathwork and those physical experiences and the love of my wife and children. The children were, I mean, I never wanted children. After my own childhood, I thought, I'm never getting married, I'm never having children. And it happened.
Yeah, same as myself. I never planned to have kids, and it just happened.
And they're a blessing.
I think that's a significant piece that you say there about that. There's a part of you that people don't know, and you're acknowledging it. It's the kid in me that's never going to get hurt again. And that's something I try to talk to people about. You know, when people say that they're healers and they're healed, I believe, this is my own belief, is that there's no healing. There's forms of soothing and minding and coping mechanisms. But that little boy, as yours was 8 or 9 or 10, mine was 8 and 7, he's still there. And he can stoke his head at any time. So I have to be very mindful of that. Mm. So there's no healed going on. He's still there. And it's a part of us that we don't show, because it's not needed all the time either, but it's there.
It's also very vulnerable. But I mean, I think there is healing in the sense that it's like a cut. The cut is healed. Do you know what I mean? And there is a scab on it. But it can be opened up. And obviously, it's back to behavior. So if I don't have a problem, be it Buddhism, be it Catholicism, be it whatever, where I'm thinking, I'm trying to be spiritual, trying to be honest, trying not to be selfish, trying to mind my temper, trying to be full of pride and arrogance. So I don't feed that beast. Because that child is also very angry and kind of want, and that's what I saw at that time in the meditation. He wanted vengeance. He wanted kind of retribution. Like, I think, I mean, why do, anger is a useful emotion. We'd all be slaves if we weren't able to go, fuck off, get away from me. Yeah. So a lot of us have resentment, and it's human, but it's poison. You know, that sort of way, poison. So, I mean, I don't know, there are very vulnerable, like, you know, with the breathwork, you're lying there, oh, Jesus, like you're wide open. So it's really important, it's a safe environment. It's, and that's maybe why we need a combination of talking and therapy like that. And maybe why people love drugs and music and stuff, that sense of connection, and that, you know, like the MDMA effect where you just, I love you.
I get little pangs of nostalgia. I'll be wanting to hear a song and I think, oh, I wouldn't mind getting a few E's or doing a bit of MDMA and get that, you know, oxytocin, serotonin going and connect to people. And then I remind myself of the
The
Suicide Tuesday
and the Weepy Wednesday.
The Weepy Wednesday are sitting there watching nature, bro. Oh, I can't believe that baby bear just died. Hours of crying. Like, what the fuck?
Well, that's, I mean, these, I think, are useful things. They're coming back in. Ayahuasca, MDMA, LSD. It's all resurging. I mean, coming back to the breathwork. The breathwork takes energy. You have to physically breathe. But the thing I like about the breathwork, I mean, I think these medicines, substances are very useful. And done in the right way. I have lots of mates who use them for trauma victims, for war survivors, for, and they're very successful. Even I know, I have a couple I know, they use it for relationship therapy. And, you know, it's great because there's no fear and people just tell each other and there's empathy on both sides.
I think Erwin Yalom, he done some studies with ecstasies, with couples and all that, didn't he? It changed his life.
Yeah.
Him and his wife, they done some ecstasy
together.
She's
dead, God love him. He's just written a book about that whole process of her dying.
I love his work.
Letting it go, you know? But which grief? I mean, I think all therapy is about grief because it's about letting go, you know. And that's why in my own situation. So I suppose I did all that. Went to the, you know, coming back to the story, which, you know, you can go to meetings. If people are interested in stories about addiction, go to open meetings, open AA or NA meetings, and listen to people tell deep stories. I mean, sometimes it bores me. Like you go, I went to an AA meeting the other night. People start talking about drinking. And I'm thinking, none of you have drunk in fucking years. Why are you sitting here talking about drinking? Now, the theory is that the purpose of the meeting is for the newcomer. But, like, you'll get meetings where there's no newcomer at the meeting. And I'd be thinking, why are you all talking about drinking? Why aren't you talking about your missus or your fucking health or what you're doing? Or so you have to be careful of that. It can become very safe to talk about. And that's another reason for resentments. It's very safe for me to sit here and say, you know, all these traumas and stuff. They're very familiar. What's it? Frightening is that woman's experience. Let's look at your magnificence.
Yeah.
You know, let's look into the light. And what, I mean, the churches have been trying to sell it to people for years. Let's be spiritual. Let's look at the wonders of nature. Let's fucking bow before God, whatever God is. And, I mean, that was beaten into me. So I'm blessed, you know, coming back to my sister and stuff. She was very successful and wasn't brought to her knees. So she just held on to the resentment. If you understand what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was beaten out of me. And that's, I have to remember that. Now, I could use my story, and I have done sometimes, yeah, the people, like, oh, you're nervous. And I'm manipulating them. I'm telling the story. I'm doing a Tarantino.
Yeah.
Oh, me, and I was very wounded, and I survived. But, yeah. I mean, on the other hand, it is true. Nora said it to me the other day, that the woman who just facilitates with us, that she says, you survived. I have survived a lot of things, but not just survived. I've worked through a lot of things, a lot of changes. But I'm blessed. I do acknowledge the presence of the divine. I don't know what it is. You understand? But I'm not this. Like Groff used to say, the chances of this happening is like getting all the bits of a 747 jet, lying them out on the ground, and the wind blowing them and creating the jet. He said, it's not chance. It can't be chance. There is some sort of wisdom, some sort of consciousness that flows.
Happy accident, as Mr. Yeah. say. And it's brilliant that you acknowledge that about your using your pain and telling your story. I know you say this in workshops, I do. Like, I've turned my poison into my potion. People say, was your childhood good or bad? I says, well, I'm standing here now and I'm getting paid for it. So was it good or bad? I'm now benefiting off it. So was it that bad and was that good? It just was. It's just an experience. And here I am. And it's...
Well, it might have been painful.
It was back then.
And that's what your mum was trying to get me yesterday, into the pain. So part of me is thinking, I don't want to go there. And now some of it is because I don't want her sitting there looking at me while I'm in bits, do you know what I mean? Because I've only been with you like 10 sessions, I'm not sure if I even trust you. But then another part of me is, as you said, it's like, I've done it, I've done that. I've sat there and laid there and I've snogged and vomited into basins and wept like a child, and I've been cradled by people and I've been held. But that pain, and that's what I said to me, ma, you gave me a gift. I wouldn't have been able to sit with all the people I've sat with, witnessed all the stuff I've witnessed in the rehab and breathwork sessions, if I hadn't that experience.
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't have been able to do it.
Yeah.
You know, I love playing golf, which is a real kind of fucking, I don't know, a strange sport, but like some of the lads up there, if someone started crying, they'd fucking get in the car and drive home. Do you know what I mean? They couldn't handle it. It's too real. So it was a gift.
And that's what I say that too. It's says only from my past. I can't sit. Like, that's how I was able to walk into the hospital with no medical experience and sit with brain injury patients, because all I seen in front of me was pain. I know pain. I can go into being in prisons, and I've been in, you know, youth detention centers. They're just human beings to me with pain, and that's what my past and my experiences give me, to be able to sit with someone, because pain is pain, isn't it, no matter what your story is.
That's a bit sometimes where I get like look how blessed I am here. I mean, it's a fucking palace. Do you know what I mean? Like, what would I worry about when I go on a holiday? Like,
people come and feed you grapes and all, do they?
Yeah, exactly. Do you know what I mean? Like, but then, you know, when I worked for the Drugs Task Force, and I worked in Rialto and Tala and different places, you think, well, I couldn't totally make sense of it. And then they're being drugged out of their heads with methadone and stuff, and thinking, like, that's not really the way to, you know, circumstances. It's kind of strange. It really is strange. Like, I'm blessed, and that's all I can really focus on. And accept a blessing rather than, I mean, I remember sleeping in the shelters down there in Bray at one stage, and different things. They were different times, you know. But I have always worked, that was something that came up in the therapy estate, since it was that size I've worked.
Me too.
I got my first job at 10 years old, and do you know what I mean? I have a strong work ethic, because I was talking to her about what, in coming November, I'm going to stop. And then I'm looking at her and thinking, I'm not going to stop.
No.
I'm going to step away from something for a while.
Do something else.
Yeah, totally. I've already planned. I'm going to do a medicine work in probably Corfu or Croatia. So I'll invite people if they want. I'll get a villa, make sure it's nice and safe, it's nice and warm, and get some MDMA and LSD, and get a very small group of people who I know can handle it. And we do a week or so of work, you know,
wow,
which I think would be amazing.
Incredible.
Yeah. And I'm going to see that woman in Newtown. I want to talk. She wants me to do it there, but I think I'd prefer to do it outside the country. And,
okay.
But that's underground now, so you didn't see that. But, and then a guy rang me from Castle Blaney, who's just up somebody. He wants people to come and do workshops there. But I'm thinking now, we've a workshop next month where we're building the drum, and then we do a bit of breath work. And also Jean's garden. I was thinking, we need to get out of that room.
Mm.
Like, the room is great and the work is great, but there's 6 acres of incredible. Oh, yeah, and we did a walk on Sunday morning, and just the amount of stuff. And the healing power, one of the best things I ever did was I did a vision quest in the Hebrides, where they just left me on an island. As part of the shamanic training, there's different bits. I went to Peru, I went to Scandinavia, but this was one trip to Scotland. And they just left me there. And they said, we'll be back for you tomorrow. Right, and I sat out, and it was probably one of the most profound, and I fucking screamed and roared, and the wind howled, and there was lightning, and it was really, I don't know. My intention was to live with an open heart, because my heart was closed, even though I was caring for people and helping people. Help is the sunny side of control, so I was trying to control everything. And I came back, they came back for me in the morning, and I wept, and they brought me back to the centre. I just kept weeping every time I saw people, just started weeping. My heart had been opened just by sitting out. Do you know what I mean? Just by sitting out in nature. And the same with Vipassana. So, I mean, all these techniques are great, and therapy is great, and all the models are great, but the nature has its own power, if we can connect with it.
Yeah, if we can connect, if we allow ourselves to. You know, people are always talking, you know, and I'm not dogging anyone or putting them down. You know, people saying, this is great, sea swimming, therapy, ayahuasca, breathwork. There's so many, many, many things out there. But for anyone that's in addiction or struggling with mental health or trauma, what's your go-to thing to tell them to do, or where would you
meditate on the problem?
Yeah
daily change your behavior and your feelings will follow. It's that simple.
Yeah.
If I keep doing the same thing, I'm the same person. If I change it, I'll be a different person. Like, my wife thinks we're crazy, you know, the breath work and ayahuasca. I mean, we've had great sessions in the house here, and I mean, she sees no one's acting like, but she still thinks we're crazy. She kind of knows that we're all, a lot of the people in those areas are they've had restlessness and discontent and unease, searching. I mean, I was thinking that yesterday. I was driving along and I was looking at this woman and thought, I've spent most of my life looking for my mother. I'll never get her. Do you know what I mean? So it's a big fantasy that goes on with me. I mean, I have a beautiful woman here, but I'm still and something that's missing, like, you know what I mean?
It has a subsided, though.
Oh, totally, yeah.
Yeah, because I have felt that I've always been looking for something, but I found that when I turned in and I found my heart, you know, creation is the what brought me into my heart. My heart is heaven on earth, and I've never loved this deeply. And I think that's what I was searching for, love.
Of course,
but it has subsided. So
well, the craving. I mean, the Buddha said craving is the greatest source of misery. So, like, obviously, if I'm hungry, that's the worst craving you can get. Or you're freezing fucking cold, I want to get warm. They're basic physical things. But then spiritually or emotionally, if I want stuff, you know, I was with a girl the other day too, and I want a husband and I want babies and stuff. And I was trying to say to her, look, she doesn't want to pay for therapy, so she'll invite me out for a coffee. Do you know what I mean? I let her away, which is only a young girl, you know, that sort of way. But, like, you can see how discontent she was. Discontent, and I couldn't just say, kept saying to her, craving is the greatest source of misery. You gotta let this go, it'll happen if it happens. Yeah, really angry. And then she messaged me a few days later. I think you're right, actually. It's about letting go. But like, it's impossible. You know, the way they used to kill chimps in the woods, to put a sweet fruit in a jar and you tie the jar with a rope to it, you know, so the chimp come out and you see that and put his hand in the jar and grab the fruit. So then you'd run out and tap the chimp on the head with a stick, right, and obviously go off and cook it up or whatever. But the chimp wouldn't let go of the fruit. Even though it could smell the danger, and the chimp would want to go over and smack it.
Yeah.
It wouldn't let go, and I think we're like that. Because we're from monkeys. I get my hand around something, oh, that's fucking good. You know what I mean? And like, you're getting battered, and fucking want that. We're like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like we're sitting, I'm about to sit in the house, and I'd be gorging. And I know that this is not the right thing to do, and I just keep going.
Yeah, but
keep going,
but monkeys,
keep going.
But monkeys, this is where it is, not here.
Yeah.
You know, it's fascinating, isn't it? The whole area of personal development and growth. And, I mean, I think, like you were saying about no apple trees in the inner city and stuff, like, there is an element of physical location, of what you see all the time, that there's no nurture.
Oh, yeah.
It's a different type, but there are better communities, they're tighter communities, there's a lot more love and support. I mean, people are very isolated here in these kind of, I suppose, I don't know if it's middle-class communities or, but there is better community, but there isn't the fucking pump. And maybe disadvantage brings people together. I mean, I don't think it's fair. Like the world is not fair.
No.
There's no fairness. There's no kind of do good and you'll end up. I mean, I remember saying to Dara, a lad we did a breathwork with, Asha, we'd be great. We get to heaven and God will say, well done. And Dara says, what are you talking about? God could play that. That was a creep issue. You know what? What were you doing, sticking your nose in other people's business?
Yeah.
Why weren't you looking after yourself? And you know that sort of way. So
stop interfering in other people's process.
Yeah, exactly.
As they say.
Yeah.
What's been your greatest teacher? What has been your greatest lesson?
Me wife.
This woman sounds like a prophet.
She's
like
saint.
A gift from God.
Saint.
Well, you know what they say, saints and sinners live together.
Yeah,
don't
no, no, totally. That's the hard part. Which is, you know, living with a saint is a real challenge. But the greatest teacher, I don't know. There's so many things. I couldn't bring it down to one thing. I really couldn't.
Give us some of them.
Well, obviously, definitely the 12-step program, the meetings, the sharing with people, the honesty. The breathwork has been phenomenal. In its own way, you know, working with the ayahuasca and meeting people that way. Just life, meet parents in their own way, you know, that sort of way.
Isn't it great that you've acknowledged the gift of your parents, the word, and you now see that as your...
Ah, yeah, God loved them.
It's twisted
yeah,
and seen
it was good,
for
and
benefit.
It was easier with him, you know what I mean? It was easier to care for him.
Yeah, that took some incredible...
Yeah, I suppose it did take a lot of energy, and now I need to, that's why I'm going to take a break. Just a few months, I think. But I've always changed and moved on and done different things, and I'm very lucky. But I have failed fully to look after myself. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, physically, I was diagnosed with a different condition. One condition in 1985, I came into recovery. I've never followed the guidelines, so I actually was lying in bed and I thinking, you could slowly commit suicide. If you understand what I mean?
Yeah.
By not taking responsibility. That will hurt. That will hurt my children and my wife. So, I mean, I'm being dramatic, but you know what I'm saying?
No.
I'm as human as anybody else.
Yeah.
In terms of I'm not perfect. But I've been very blessed. And I am very bright. That's what I didn't realise. I'm very bright. Great capacity for information. And a great capacity to engage with people, as you said, you know, bring us back to the start of the conversation, that I'm not an atypical therapist.
That's, I think, what I connected with you, and I probably connected with you more on the last prep with I was on, and I seen you having your difficulties around your man, and you cried, that you're very human. Like, you know, you talk about your physical difficulties and your trauma, and you're open about it, where society sometimes presumes that therapists have a sword. Anyone I speak to, when they hear me tell a sword, they go, I thought you had a fucking sword. I said, no, I'm a fucking basket case. I'd be up there crying and eating me fucking apple cake at the one time, stuffing my face. And it's about showing that human side, isn't it?
Totally. Yeah. People are probably afraid, you know, that sort of way. I mean, I think there's too many therapists in Ireland. You know, this young woman was looking for a therapist and she wasn't happy with the woman I referred her to. I'm not going to take her on. I don't take people on anymore. You know, it's too much to be taking on a relationship with someone now. But I want to kind of move into different things, and I want to move more into the music and art and just being creative. And that takes time. You can't be then sitting there waiting for the doorbell to ring and then, do you know what I mean? So, but I was looking at the list and I was exploring and thinking, okay, there's a couple of people I could refer to. She wouldn't go to one or two of them because they're quite dear. And some of them won't do reduced cost counselling. And then I thought, there's fucking too many therapists.
Too many healers.
Yeah, there's like a place in St Kilda, there's about nine of them. And then like then there's other people, like St Kilda's only like, 4 miles that way. There's about like 40 therapists within a mile of each other.
And I'm thinking, like, that all doesn't add up. There's so many therapists and so many of these healers. Why is there so many fucking people in trouble? Like when I talked to a girl who wanted me to do work last week, and she told me, I told her what I do, and then she said to me, oh yeah, I do stuff myself, I'm a healer.
Oh yeah.
And when I hear that, the bells go off, I go, fucking healer, will you stop the fucking lights?
Some healers.
Though. People say that to me, that I'm a healer, and I go, if I was a fucking healer, I'd fix me car first.
I would be cynical, but there's nothing wrong, and I think that's a useful thing, to have a healthy cynicism. I mean, the world is wondrous, the universe is amazing, but healer, I do find myself reacting, or if someone says to me, I'm a healer, especially if I know them, and I think, you know, like a healer, you're on an ego trip. And that's part of why I want to step back from the breathwork for a few months, just to check that it hasn't turned into, because as you've seen, the work that we do, and the work we do on the Sunday morning, and which is, it's all intuitive for me, I just do it. But I always think then after, now, is that an ego trip, you know, like, so I think to step back from it and just to well, yeah, it is a gift, it is. And you know, because I wouldn't like to waste the gift either. And I mean, Jean is a great woman, and she, like, I'm only 62, nearly 63, so I mean, there's loads of time to do stuff. And I do feel I have an obligation, you know, like a social responsibility, if you like. But it doesn't necessarily, I mean, I could go gigging with the girls and I could bring as much joy to people, or do weddings or funerals, or you know, or start running different types of workshops, like start running different events where people can be themselves, and it doesn't have to be all dressed up as therapy.
Of course, I want to hear from you and what you're, the path that you're moving in. And I listened to a significant podcast years ago by David Kessler and Brené Brown about the grief model. You know, I think there's five stages of the grief model, and David Kessler with Kubler-Ross's family, they brought in a sixth, which is creativity. We move from our head to our heart using creativity. And that itself,
interesting,
you know, you have the Kubler-Ross model, you know, the ebbs and flows, but then they brought as a sixth one was creation. Creation helps us move through our head to our heart, using our hands, using art, using stuff. That's one that, and as you talk about in the holotropic, it may not just be trauma, but artists can use
creativity.
And I found my greatest release of pain was writing poems and talking and the videos I make, and this shit here has been a great healer to me.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
No, definitely. That's what, like, life is life. Like, labeling is dangerous. You know what I mean? So, like, as soon as you say trauma. Sorry. Everybody stiffens up, you know. So if you try to talk about life, like, it's life.
Yeah. But also if you talk about love, people are like, oh, fuck's sake. You're talking about
love is more acceptable. You don't think?
You put a post up or anywhere, you start talking about, you know, trauma and, you know, judgment. People are on it. You start talking about love and God and light. Like, oh, this thing.
Yeah. God, I feel sorry for the churches and ministers and people, true believers.
Yeah.
Like, if they have that faith, it's hard, you know, because the churches are great and all their models are great, whatever model you take. But when you have to find your own way, really, haven't you?
Absolutely.
I suppose therapists are the modern priests, and that's maybe why there's so many in Ireland. But I'm very cynical about it all, you know, and there isn't enough control. There's no licensing still for therapy. So, and I mean, I know people mean well, but like licensing and special kind of quality control will be useful.
I'm very mindful of your time because I know you're going to have to do other superhero work in your community.
Yeah,
we're all talking about
delivering
that.
Dodgy dinners.
Oh, fucking hell. Yeah. I'll be ringing up some Motilium and fucking a piece of gravy ticking
them
up.
I'd eat them now, but my wife hates them.
Well, that's because she's a saint and she's a guru.
Well, they're also food snobs. They have a great tradition of food.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because I got salmon yesterday in drug stores and that was horrible.
It was
this little salmon salad with salads on it. I got a bit of sushi, I don't know if you like noramaki and the wrapped seaweed and stuff, but that was okay. But the other thing, I threw it out and I was thinking, how can they sell this? Like, there's a big stone and no big, like, it's just all the same stuff, isn't it? And I was laziness because I just couldn't be bothered cooking. Do you know what I mean?
Still got one of your minions to do, have you?
I don't have any minions.
Well, you need to get some minions.
Cooking is good and I'm a very good cook and I could cook. But I just, I sometimes when I come out of those sessions, I don't feel like doing anything with your woman. And it's probably because it does have a value. Something is cooking away slowly and you're thinking about some of our interventions, you know?
Right, before we wrap up, and I asked all my amazing guests, and you were included in that, what's the one thing you'd like people to take away after listening to this interview?
My bank account number. Let's get transferred. No,
good,
no.
Go ahead. What's that?
Greed is still there.
GoFundMe page.
Hope. Yeah, hope. And like the idea of not magnificence, because that sounds too excessive, but hope that there's love, as you say, there's love everywhere. Just try and access it.
And what we focus on grows.
Yeah, totally. And that it's what is pain? It's a sensation. Do you know what I mean? What is trauma? It's an experience that you can either lock into it, react to it, which is hard, or you can kind of grow through it.
Absolutely.
But like, you do need resources, and I do feel there are some very lonely, isolated people out there. And I know even in addiction, like the statistics say for food example, it's zero. Really zero people recover from food
problems. Yeah, yeah, I know that. I could have went to
many. They just die.
I could have went to food addiction, drink addiction, drug addiction, porn, just debauchery.
I think the other addictions, it's about 30%. That's what people say, 2% for heroin addicts, but I don't know if that's true. So people are suffering out there. They are, definitely, and just because they're human. So I would hope that, you know, if one person, like I remember thinking this years ago, that we had a workshop and only five people turned up, right? And then this woman had this profound experience. And I thought, if that's all we ever do in our entire lifetime, if we heal one person, isn't that a blessing? And also, heal yourselves, guys. You know,
this is because, you know, when I do the work, you know, my dad and mom thank me for doing the healing work, because I now create healing conversations without judgment. And we walk back in the past and I ask them questions and they reflect on the practice and I remind them, you didn't know better, you're doing your best. And I honestly say that from the bottom of my heart. I mean, I've got good parents, they just made decisions that weren't in service of me, but they tried to do the best because some other numpty gave them a handbook that they thought was a good handbook, and I try not pass that handbook on. But I'm sure unconsciously I have. I say I have money there for my daughter's college fund, but it's going to be for counselling.
Not at all.
Look, Paul, I want to thank you. Thanks. It's one of the only interviews I've had in a long, long time that I was genuinely excited. You know, I love the interviews, but this I really wanted to sit down with you. You're an incredibly young being. I know you probably find that hard to hear. It's like singing your happy birthday all day.
No, I know that.
No, but yeah, you're an incredible human being. I thank you for the holotropic experience. Thank you for a man showing me how to do it. Open and honesty and vulnerable. It's just incredible. And you have a gift. You really, really have a gift. You know, you are the sacred town. I appreciate you.
Great. Thank you.
I love you, man. Okay, so there you have it. What an incredible interview. 60 minutes. I was hoping to keep them short, but there's no way I'm going to condense stuff like this. Went on for days. Thanks very much. If anything triggered you in this, please reach out to me, reach out to someone, family, friends, talk about it. We talk about trauma, addiction, anything comes up for you, share it with people, and mind your little self. All my interviews are brought to you by my sponsor, Niall Riley from Remunerated Graphics, also from Shannon's Hope Line. And if you have any time, please come on down to the Liberty Market. We're open Thursday, Friday and Saturday. Lots of bargains of bands. We're in the heart of the Liberties. It's an incredible place. We're still open. We're still active. and it's deadly. You can find whatever you need for family and friends. So thanks very much. Thanks to Paul. Thanks to Bray. I'm sitting under this shell that makes sure my ginger noggin doesn't get burned. So look after yourself. Mind your little self. Take care. Bye-bye.
I used to think if I couldn't find hope, I should just let it all go. I used to think if I couldn't make dreams come true, I should just let them all go.